Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode, the latest edition of Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. When I say us, of course, I mean myself, the Porkmeister, and of course, rock chick writer extraordinaire, Leslie Ann Jones. And Leslie Ann, it has come to my attention that you've been bigging yourself up around the West End of London. So you've become a lady of leisure and glamour, have you? Again.
I can't do anything, can I? You've got your spies everywhere, Parry.
Indeed, indeed. So what have you been up to?
I had a very glamorous day yesterday. I had lunch at Scott's in Mayfair,
ooh,
which probably best known these days as the place where Nigella Lawson was throttled by her former husband in the sort of little alcoves outside the restaurant. I was inside the restaurant, wonderfully civilized.
Yeah.
They've got a new thing in place, which is instead of having your temperature taken with a thermometer when you go in, which is what most restaurants have to have now.
Yeah.
In fact, all restaurants, I think, they've got a screen, like a monitor, like a computer screen there, and you just stand in front of it and it takes your temperature. They've got glass screens installed within the restaurant and, you know, no masks, no, you can't leave your coat in the cloakroom. That's the one thing.
Right.
But they've taken all the precautions and the food and wine are as wonderful as ever.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Well, I'm very pleased about all that. That's great. The thermometer thing is not a thermometer in the old-fashioned sense of putting in your mouth. It's now a gun they point at your head, isn't it?
Yeah, mostly. But this one, you just stood in front of it, which I thought was rather lovely.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now,
every home should have one.
Every home should have one. You're absolutely right. And who exactly was entertaining you yesterday?
Well, I couldn't possibly say.
You couldn't possibly say? I see. Yeah. I'm going to have to send out my spies to the West End of London to find out.
I'll be in there again on the 7th of September, I think. So, yeah.
Really?
If you want to park somebody in a car outside and leak the
story
to the press, it wouldn't be the first time, would it?
Well, exactly. Well, I was out and about this week as well, but nowhere nearly as glamorous as Scott of Mayfair. I was, in fact, in a, I suppose you call it a boozer, a pub. Pub restaurant near to one of the places I work, London Bridge. And it's called the Horseshoe, and it's great. They've got the system up with the, you know, the one way in, and then you go around, you know, in a line in the pub, all the tables are separated, all that kind of stuff. It all works very well. And I have to say, by the time we left sort of mid-afternoon, it was hotting up, and it was packed. And I didn't see an awful lot of adherence to social distancing, really.
Well, this is the problem, and this is what people have to get their head around.
Yep.
You know, this COVID is here to stay for at least for the next couple of years, I would say.
Yeah.
I did an interview this week with some members of the St. Bride's Choir for a Bach online concert, and we did a sort of interval interview, if you like.
Oh, yeah.
And they are very pessimistic about the way their industry is going. So in normal times, they have got tours lined up with various opera companies going all over the world. All of those have been cancelled. And that's all their work for the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
And where else is income coming from? I think, you know, we need to be aware every day that this disease is not going away, that we need to adapt as human beings, and we need to find other ways of living. People cramming back into pubs as if nothing has happened is not going to help us get over it.
Well, I have to agree with that. But then again, I'm such a social animal that the idea of closing the pubs down again horrifies me. You know, surely we've got to get to herd immunity sooner or later. I think only like one person in 14,000 has now got the disease in this country. So the odds of catching it are very low, aren't they?
Still killing people, you know, randomly as well. So you'll get somebody in their late 30s, early 40s with no underlying health conditions who is felled by it and who either dies or stays in a coma for months on end. And there's no explanation for that. That could be any of us.
Yeah, no.
And we're in the danger zone as well, you know. So,
yeah.
And also, this coronavirus has been around for about 15 years. There's never once been a vaccine developed.
No, I know.
And who's to say that there's going to be one?
No, that's what we've got to work on. That's what scientists all around the world should be doing, trying to find a vaccine.
Look, which is what they are doing, but, you know, they're not getting anywhere. And also, vaccines need to be in development for 10 years.
I
know. So it's not as if we're going to get one that we can use immediately.
Well, don't worry. The Russians say they've got one. So we'll just have to wait until the Ruskies give us the benefit of their science. I agree with everything you've said. But at some stage, you've just got to get on with life and accept there is a risk element to living. You know what I mean?
Yes, you do.
And we get on. But anyway, there we go. Talking about the living, it is the birthday today of Mr. Robert Plant. Is he the most famous lead singer, frontman of a rock group of all time? Maybe Mick Jagger excepted?
Well, he is considered the greatest voice in rock and roll. He's, you know, in all these polls that take place around the world, he's continually voted the finest, way above Jagger and Freddie Mercury and David Bowie and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. What I can't get my head around is that he's had a 50-year career, which is astonishing, isn't it?
Well, not
I think
really.
It's on.
You know, 22 years of age, that means he started. A lot of people in the rock business started a lot younger than that, didn't they?
Yes, they did. But, you know, the longevity of such a person. I think it's unfortunate that Led Zeppelin, his band, had a long-standing association with the Hells Angels. And so there was something rather sinister about that, wasn't there? But then, of course, John Bonham died, the drummer, and they disbanded in the end.
Yes.
And if you remember, Led Zeppelin performed at Live Aid in Philadelphia.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Their contribution, they had Phil Collins on drums instead. He flew over, didn't he?
On the Concorde, yeah.
On the Concorde to get there. But his contribution was considered so inferior that they didn't allow their bit of film to be used on the video of Live Aid.
Really? What, because they thought Phil Collins was such a bum drummer?
Yeah.
Oh, golly, that's amazing. I thought he was accepted as a very competent drummer in that group he was in. What was it called?
Was Genesis.
Genesis, that's right, yeah. I thought he was the drummer.
Yeah. I think that he maybe just didn't rise to the occasion on the day, or maybe he had jet lag. I don't know. People still get jet lag on Concorde.
Well, that's absolutely true. Robert Plant lives in the Midlands, and my mate, who's a footballer, who retired footballer, lives in the Midlands. His son works in a music shop in Birmingham, and he's never been so overwhelmed as to the day when a bloke with long, straggly hair walked up to him in the shop and ordered a an amplifier. And the poor lad was so starstruck, he got the order all wrong and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? That's the sort of effect I think Robert Plant would have on people. He is actually a legend, isn't he?
He's a very cool guy. He's got a house in Primrose Hill as well, around the corner from a restaurant I go to. He's a very interesting guy. His best friend, actually, is Bob Harris, the broadcaster.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And they call him Percy Plant. They don't call him Robert. His nickname is Percy.
Good God, Percy Plant. Talking about Bob Harris and DJs and all that, have you come across Tony Blackburn's latest revelations that for the last 40 years he's only ever slept 4.5 hours a night?
I know Tony quite well. Yeah. He's obsessive about sleep and also about food. He believes that none of us should eat meals or snacks or food. We should all just have to take a pill. He's so bored. He's vegetarian.
Yeah.
He very rarely finds anything on restaurant menus that he wants to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I was round at Frank Allen's house one evening for dinner, Frank being the bass player of The Searchers.
Right.
And Tony and his wife, Debbie, were also there. There were a number of guests, Bobby Crush, various people. And Frank produced this marvelous meal that had some sort of vaguely vegetarian first course. The second course, the main course, was beef.
Yeah.
At which point Tony Blackburn says, "But I'm vegetarian." So Frank said, "Well, you could have told me before, I've prepared this fine repast." Mm. Tony says, "Haven't you got a pizza in the fridge or something?" Mm. So Frank goes, "No, I haven't." Mm. So Tony said, "Well, I'll just have the vegetables."
Mm-hmm.
And then a message came out to the kitchen, because I was helping to carry in the plates of food, that Tony would have some of the gravy, at which point we died laughing because the gravy was made with the juices from the beef.
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't he work that out?
No.
Good God. Of course, he's a very affable chap, isn't he, Tony Blackburn?
I love him. Yeah, he's delightful.
Done the job.
Very, very fond of him. And his programmes are still great. You know, that distinctive Tony Blackburn voice, which Debbie, his wife, doesn't actually like very much. She says she hates his broadcasting voice. Really? He puts it on, she says. Well, that's the whole point, isn't it, really?
Yeah, the whole point of broadcasting. Now, talking about that, by the way, about vegetarianism and all that, James Blunt's a singer, isn't he? And he's just revealed that he got scurvy because he did exactly the opposite to what Tony Blackburn's done. James Blunt says, it's a free country. I can eat meat whenever I want, as much as I want. So just to wind up vegetarian friends, he ate nothing but meat, like beef or lamb or something else, you know, for weeks on end without any vegetables. And in the end, he got scurvy. I mean, that, again, is another pretty obvious health defect that you're going to get yourself into if you don't eat vegetables, isn't it?
Well, sometimes people go on this diet, don't they, where they have just red meat and natural yogurt.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be within 20 yards of that person.
No, exactly.
If you know what I mean.
Well, of course, but it's also, it's ridiculous. You become a carnivore if you're just eating meat. The whole idea of being a human being is you eat a balanced diet, don't you?
Yeah, all things in moderation, unless you particularly exclude food groups because of religious beliefs or because you've chosen to be a vegetarian or a vegan. Mm. I mean, as he says, it's a free country. Do as you please, but do your best to stay healthy, especially in these challenging times.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought everybody knew that if you didn't eat, you know, fruits and vitamin C and vegetables, you would get scurvy, because that's what the famous stories about the Royal Navy are all about, isn't it? You know, we all know why the British are called limeys in America. It's because eventually Royal Navy doctors worked out that their sailors got this terrible skin condition, which became scurvy, because they weren't getting enough vitamins in their body. So they would then stop at Caribbean islands and literally harvest a whole forest of limes or oranges or lemons, but mostly limes. And all of a sudden, scurvy went away. So even I knew that. So I don't know why James Blunt didn't.
I mean, he's a very intelligent guy. I'm not a mad fan of his, actually. His voice is a bit high-pitched for me, but I think he's probably just winding people up. And I think, you know, some people think that they can take a vitamin C tablet and they get all the vitamin C they need. There's no substitute for the real thing.
No,
you're better off eating fruit and veg.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. I was delighted reading one of my journals in the last couple of days to find out that a vital source of vitamin D comes from mushrooms, right? Now, I have a vitamin D deficiency. I don't know why, but I take a vitamin D tablet every day. And that was linked to me being diagnosed with diabetes too, right? And so I took this because they said, now I think it's due to the fact that all my life I've tried to keep out of the sun because my skin burns easily. I've got freckles, you know, I get rashes in the heat wave last week and all that. So I think that decades of keeping out of the sun have given me a vitamin D deficiency, but mushrooms are very good for you. And I love mushrooms. There is nothing better for me than mushrooms on toast, okay?
Oh, I agree. That's one of my favourite meals. I'm coming around to yours for dinner.
Excellent. And incidentally, I cook my mushrooms in butter.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I use a substitute butter. I don't use actual butter made from cow's milk, because we've had that conversation before.
Yes. Yeah,
but there are all kinds of butter substitutes.
Yeah, that's
which
what
are
I mean.
Very good.
It's like, you know, Kerrygold super spread or something like that. You know what I mean? And but what I learnt in this piece I read is that what you're supposed to do with mushrooms is leave them on the kitchen window shelf, right, because they actually soak up vitamin D out of the sun like a sponge, and then when you eat them, they pour all that vitamin D into your body.
That sounds a bit far-fetched.
No, it's not. No, it's absolutely true. I mean, the same thing with tomatoes, isn't it? Do you ever put tomatoes in the fridge?
All the time.
Oh, I don't. You put tomatoes in the fridge, you kill off the taste. You shouldn't make tomatoes cold. Tomatoes belong on the kitchen shelf for the sun to... I've had trouble trying to buy soft tomatoes in this country for the last 30 years. You can't. They're always hard, in my view. So I lay them out on the kitchen window ledge, and I let the sun work on them until they're soft, and then I eat them.
private life of Porky, eh? I take issue with the thing about mushrooms, because of course mushrooms grow in the shade, in the forest, in the woods. You know, they grow under the canopies of wonderful green branches. They don't see sunlight, so why would they be so demanding of it on your kitchen windowsill?
I've no idea, but you know, I can only read what the experts write about this food. And you know, there's nothing better, as you quite rightly say, than a lightly cooked in butter mushroom. And if they're full of vitamin D as well, they've now become my favourite superfood. Tell me, Leslie-Ann, do you, in your, you know, your sortie out to Scots of Mayfair yesterday, did you dab a little Chanel number 5 on your earlobes?
Well, no. It smells like cats on me, and I know that it does because my mother's worn it for about 60 years.
What?
It's awful on me. It smells lovely on her. I think it's the Marmite of designer fragrance, Chanel No. 5.
Really?
Because it does seem to change with the acidity of a person's skin and their own sort of essence.
Really?
So it smells absolutely awful on me, I can tell you.
How do you know?
Because I've smelt it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, that's your own impression. It's what other people, you know, have thought over the years. I mean, it's still the most expensive perfume, isn't it?
It's one of them. It's not the most by any means, but it is the fragrance that Marilyn Monroe said was the only thing she wore in bed.
That's right. Yeah, very good. It says in this, reading this piece, it's a book review of Coco Chanel, okay? It says a bottle of Chanel No. 5 is sold every 30 seconds somewhere in the world. So she got quite a good business there, didn't she, really?
It's quite common, though, isn't it, in that case? I don't want to wear a perfume that everybody's wearing.
Well, I suppose you could be right. I remember as a kid, whenever you went on holiday to the Mediterranean, if you didn't have Ombre Solaire, you were not in the vogue. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I prefer to be a bit more elite than that. What perfume do you wear, Michael?
I don't wear perfume at all. What I do is I actually spray on my hands and then rub on my chin and my face Polo. Polo men.
Ralph Lauren, yeah.
Yeah, Ralph Lauren, that's it. Yeah, Polo, yeah. And so at Christmas sometimes, because we're all, when we get to our age, the people who've got everything and don't need anything, I always tell people to buy me some Ralph Lauren aftershave because it'll always get used. Which reminds me, by the way, your friend Mr. or Sir Paul McCartney, I remember him being asked once, what does your family buy the man who's got everything? And he said, I always ask for socks. He said, you always wear socks and socks always wear out. So he said, they're very practical. That's quite a good answer for a billionaire, isn't it?
Very good indeed. Mm. I've got a friend who's a billionaire. He owns a place down Chislehurst that's a 28-bedroom mansion.
I've got a friend who's a billionaire. I'll just throw that one into conversation.
Yeah, no, I do. This guy's got his own Sunseeker yacht. You know, they cost millions. He's got it moored somewhere off the coast of Turkey. Mm-hmm. It came to his 40th birthday a few years ago.
Right.
We were all sitting around going, what the hell do we buy Ozzy? You know, he's got everything. He's got 5 Ferraris parked outside the front.
God.
What do you buy him? And I went to Fenwick to see if there was, you know, find a bit of inspiration. What can I buy for a birthday present? You can't rock up with nothing.
Sorry, what's Fenwick?
Fenwick is a department store in just off Bond Street.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Fenwick. Yeah. Yeah.
Fenwick, some people say.
No, Fenwick.
Fenwick. Mm. So this sales lady offered me something that was a perfume for one's car.
Yes.
So it literally is made for your car. You spray it on the leather seats and the interior of your car. Yeah. Oh. So I bought him the Ferrari fragrance and he had that for, well, one of his 5 Ferraris, I guess.
No, that's not a bad idea, actually. I love the smell of freshly cleaned leather in a car. You know what I mean? You know, when you order a car and you want a limo, it's got to be precise. Somebody sends me a car and it's very obvious there's been a cat in that car or something. I refuse to get in, as you would as well. But I know I do love the smell of recently cleaned leather. Just getting back to young Coco Chanel. She was born Gabrielle Bonner Chanel, grew up in poverty in an orphanage. What a story this is, where she was made to learn how to sew. Now, she went on to make a huge impression in the fashion world with her classic designs. One of the first fashion designers to have the idea to create a perfume to promote her clothes, and thus we now have Chanel number 5. I love success stories like that, you know.
People, oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
You know, people who are self-made like that, Coco Chanel and people like that. Who was the other one, the great, very famous woman who created a huge fashion empire? And was it not Coco Chanel? It was Helena Rubinstein, yeah?
Oh, yeah. So that takes you to the idea that, you know, not everybody, in fact, not most people, could afford their couture.
Yeah.
But if you then design makeup lines, perfume lines,
yeah,
sort of related products, everybody can afford a Helena Rubinstein lipstick, for example, or a Chanel perfume.
Really?
Most people could afford a bottle of perfume.
Yeah.
So you're buying into the brand, you're buying into the whole mystique,
right,
of that designer,
right,
but you haven't had to shell out very much.
Yeah, well, excellent. Good idea. Good marketing, I would say. What's gone wrong with Madonna lately, Leslie Ann?
Oh, dear. Here we go. Let's have a go at Madge.
Well, hang on. Every day under lockdown, another mad sort of video. I mean, you know, she must be suffering sort of mental stress, I would imagine, under lockdown.
Have you seen some of the videos that people are posting on Instagram? I mean, look, other people go jogging and put images of that. Other people bake banana bread by the ton and stick up images and bits of video of that. Madonna's just doing a little dance, lying in the bath with a few flowers, pretending to smoke some weed, whatever else she's up to, hanging out with her latest toy boy, who's 26, and her daughter is also there, who's 23. So that must be interesting. But look, I mean, she's designed to shock, isn't she, Mad? She's never going to grow old gracefully.
Yeah.
So what? She's putting up a few videos. Everybody's doing it. Yeah. I'm not on Instagram, by the way. I don't think you are either.
No,
but all these kind of show-offs, I mean, this is what Madonna does best, isn't it? Showing off.
Yeah. No, well, absolutely. I mean, it's all very much a don't forget I'm here type stuff, isn't it? And talking about showbiz stars and all that, what's going on again with old Britney Spears? She's having a row now with her dad.
Oh, this is very sad because back in, I think it was 2008, she had a very public breakdown, if you remember.
Yeah.
She started shaving off her hair and things like this, and she lost control. Her father was awarded control of her finances and her personal life. So that included her children. I think she's got two boys with her ex-husband, Kevin Federline.
Yeah.
And so now she wants to regain her civil liberties. And she took him to court, her father, this is Jamie Spears, to try and win back control over her own life. And she's been denied that. Now, I think there's something very wrong about this. If she is savvy enough now and compos mentis enough now to feel strong enough at the age of 38 to take back control of her own life, she ought to be allowed to.
Yes. Well, look, I'm very much in favour of that. The only problem is you've got to be so careful when very wealthy people are in control of fortunes that they can't manage properly, because the possibility of getting ripped off is enormous. You know what I mean? People will take advantage of them, and you've got to be very, very careful. I know there's a, you know, you've got to worry about people's personal liberty and all that kind of stuff, but because of her track record of mental health problems, isn't it wise to have somebody put the brake on her spending power?
But she has no relationship with her father, and she also was at odds with her mother.
Yeah.
You know, so why is her father awarded? She's 38 years old. She wants the co-care of her finances and so on to be handed to the person who's been caring for her. And I feel that she ought to have the right to make that choice.
Yeah.
A very similar argument raged shortly after Amy Winehouse died.
Right.
And she was 27. She effectively drank herself to death.
She did, actually,
Everybody was going, where are the parents? Where was the father? You know, why weren't they watching out for her?
Yeah.
She was 27. Mm. She was independent. Mm. She had her own life. Yes. Your parents have to stop at some point.
Mm.
And, you know, in this country, the age is 18. We become responsible for ourselves.
Yeah. Well,
so I don't agree at all that her father should have control of Britney's life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a bit of a tragic story over the years, but you know, when you carry that sort of talent, you carry a burden, don't you?
Yes, of course. And we know that it's mostly dysfunctional people who go into this kind of industry because they have some void to fill. They have something to prove. They have creative angst.
Yes.
And so they are going to be eccentric and unusual people. And they do tend to need support.
Yeah.
But not for from people who haven't been there for them in their young lives.
You could well be right. Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much for being with us today. Leslie Anne already has told you of her excesses in her social life.
Oh, God. I can't say anything, can I?
Swanky restaurant in the West End and all that kind of stuff. Now, talking about social lives, all this, Leslie Anne, I want to bring to your attention something which is bothering my moral conscience greatly. Have you ever heard of killing kittens?
Oh, yes, I have. This is Emma Sales's business. She's a best friend of Kate.
Yes.
The Duchess of Cambridge.
Yes, that's right.
They go back many years. And it's got 160,000 members online. It's basically elite sex parties.
I'm getting shocked as you're talking about it.
They take place online, and they also... Prior to lockdown, you could go and explore BDSM in a dungeon or go for a ride on a sex saddle, all this kind of thing. I'm very sorry. Maybe I'm a prude.
No,
maybe I'm
right.
Old.
On a sex saddle.
Who cares? The mind boggles.
Yeah.
But look, sorry, I feel that sex should take place behind closed doors between two loving partners or however many loving partners in your arrangement. But let's not do it in public, for God's sake.
Yeah, but I mean, it gets worse. The government are giving these people a grant. So killing kittens was started off as a sort of, a contact point for people who thought the same way about how they wanted to interact with other human beings, right? Then, of course, we had lockdown. So it was all about pressing the flesh. But when you can't press the flesh, you have to then do it on a screen. So they now organise all these Zoom parties where people take off their clothes in front of a camera for the titillation of other people who are at the other end of the camera. I mean, it's an absolute disgrace. But what shocked me is that this lewd behaviour, as it's rightly described, the government have apparently endorsed it by giving them a £170,000 loan from something called the Future Fund, which helps businesses to grow. And it is described as a global sex technology company. So I think sex technology about encouraging people to start rogerizing each other and having effectively a sort of online dogging session. I mean,
I agree. I'm absolutely with you. But look, we are of the older generation. My children's generation feel very differently about sexual activity.
Yeah.
And we should not judge. If people are out there who want to indulge their fantasies and destigmatize female sexuality and all those things, that's up to them. But I don't want my nose rubbed in it.
No.
I will say this, that millions of men for quite a few years now have been indulging in online sexual activity.
Well,
they've been signing up to websites. Before that, they were watching Babe Station on television.
Yes.
All of those, what I consider to be dreadful things. But I'm an old person.
Yeah.
So, who are we to judge?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to read you a paragraph here, and it's one that shocked me, because this is a report of what goes on. It's been a familiar scene for many in recent months. The party is rather more intimate than most. This is going on Zoom. Early on, many of the attendees are already stripped down to lingerie or completely naked. And as the night gets underway, there is decidedly X-rated activity unfolding on screen in front of you. I'm not talking about this anymore, Leslie, and I'm too shocked. I'm too shocked.
Can I ask you, are we shocked because it's women doing it?
Well, it's men and women.
You know, we turned a blind eye to men and their websites, didn't we?
Mm.
So are we shocked because it's female activity?
Well, whatever it is, it's shocking. Too shocking for me. I was brought up as a straight-thinking individual.
Moving swiftly on, yeah.
Yeah, moving swiftly on. Yeah, that's right. The son of, what's her name? Hugh Grant's former girlfriend.
Liz Hurley.
Liz Hurley. I saw a picture of her and her son in a publication this week, in a paper or something like that. And he looks like her sister. It's an extraordinary similarity between mother and son. I mean, have they deliberately gone out to sort of create that sort of image?
He's got long hair, Damien, hasn't he? And he's got quite a feminine look.
Yeah.
He does look very like his mother. Mm. And I think, yes, they've made something of his sort of feminine androgyny because he's got a modelling career.
Yeah, that's right. And he wears very expensive clothes. The picture I saw of him, he was wearing like sort of pyjamas, and I thought they were pyjamas, but they weren't. They were apparently very, very expensive non-pyjamas, you know, like Killing Eve wears and all that kind of stuff. But extraordinary. But anyway, look, life is for everybody. Now, moving to something a little more sad. You know, we often keep up to date with our listeners on our Fleet Street adventures over the years and that kind of stuff. And I'm very sorry to read an obituary this week for somebody who I think was probably a colleague of yours in the showbiz world, Judy Wade.
Well, not quite. No, Judy died, sadly. God rest her soul. She was 81.
Oh, right.
So we didn't overlap by any stretch.
No.
But she had a great reputation, didn't she? She was one of the original royal reporters.
Yeah.
Old school, forthright, a trailblazing woman journalist.
Yeah.
She did all those royal tours around the globe. She was even a guest at Kate and William's wedding.
Yeah.
And I read that, you know, she was writing for Hello magazine by this time, of course, and the copy that she produced for that wedding issue covered 50 pages. It was one of their biggest ever selling issues.
Yeah.
She was known for her colourful outfits and she was very much larger than life.
Yeah.
Prior to you and I being on Fleet Street, she was 17 years at The Sun.
Yes, that's right. And she started off as a rock and roll reporter like you, but then did she go on a royal tour and then become a royal reporter for the rest of her career?
Yeah, she saw a niche, didn't she? Yeah. Nobody was really doing the royal reporting thing at that stage.
Yeah.
So she was one of the first.
Yeah.
She wrote some books about Diana as well. I haven't read them, but she was very respected by both sides, by which I mean by journalists as well as the people that she wrote about.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is quite a unique position. And I think, you know, God rest her, she was one of the best.
Well, it's a very strange position to be in, that because in the obit I saw a picture of her with Princess Beatrice, Sarah Duchess of York, and Princess Eugenie, i.e. Fergie and her two daughters. And it's a bit like when you...
Well, the ugly sisters is their note.
Well, that's very harsh. I mean, oh, blimey, another crack at another female. You know, say, you can't help yourself, can you sometimes, right?
No, I really can't.
In the world of football, as you will well know, because your father was the esteemed Ken Jones, if a defender is not picking up any yellow or red cards, it's often said of him that he's not actually getting stuck in hard enough. He's not making his presence felt. Now, I think it's very unusual for a, you know, and I'm not speaking ill of the dead. Judy has a fantastic track record. But to actually be on smiling and posing photograph terms about the people you're writing about, how did she manage to go through her career without upsetting them?
Well, because she worked for Hello magazine. Hello magazine was all about celebrating somebody's wonderful career and their best looking children in the world and their massive, great, glamorous house. Of course, a lot of those photo shoots were staged in houses that weren't actually theirs.
Yeah.
But, you know, we never tell the readers that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, The Sun would have been a very hard place for her to work. And moving to Hello at its inception in 1988 was probably the best thing she ever did.
Yeah, no, she probably did. Apparently she was a pathfinder as well because she went on the Wham tour to China, the thing that established Wham as a worldwide entity. But anyway, as you quite rightly say, illustrious career, 81 years of age, may Judy rest in peace. Now, talking about friends of the royals, by the way, I say old Tom Bradby has got another book coming out. He spins a lot of plates, doesn't he? Because he's a newsreader for ITN. And, of course, you have to be completely independent in your views when you're delivering, you know, such controversial news and all that. And yet, again, he's a royal favourite and a friend of William's and Harry's and is often interviewed as a royal expert by the people who put together his news programmes. It's really odd, isn't it?
Yeah, he's kind of in that very delicate position of, again, being a friend to the stars, in this case, the royal.
Yeah.
He and William go back many years.
Mm.
And also having to remain apolitical because he can't express coherent views when he's covering, you know, when he's presenting news at 10 or covering politics. He has to remain impartial. He also shares with them the mental health issue, doesn't
yes, he does,
he's spoken quite publicly on that,
yeah.
And is a novelist and writes sort of spy novels, doesn't he? I haven't read any of
them. Well, funny you should say that. The reason I brought his name up is that he's got a new novel coming out, and what he's doing is, and this may be a tip for yourself with your forthcoming book on John Lennon, Who Killed John Lennon, he's allowing it to be read on Kindle for 99p for one day only. Now, were you aware of this marketing ploy?
Oh, yeah. You know, most books published by mainstream publishers have been doing this for a long time.
Right.
So all books, if they're not self-published,
yeah,
but they're coming out by mainstream publishers,
mm-hmm,
they will appear in hardback, on Kindle, and also audio.
Yeah.
And then the paperback usually follows between 6 months to a year afterwards.
Right.
But yeah, the Kindle thing is no new thing. That's I haven't missed a trick there.
No, exactly. And when is the book coming out? Remind us.
Who Killed John Lennon will be published on the 17th of September. It's not long now.
No, that's not long now. That's 2.5 weeks in September. It's only about 3.5 weeks, less than a month away.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay. And you've told me some pretty good news about how far around the world that book's going to go.
Yeah, it's sold in so many countries. I've lost track now.
Really?
The sales team at my publishing house, Bonnier, have done a brilliant job.
Yeah, well, you know, that's... it's fantastic news. There's going to be a plethora of books about John Lennon because of the 80th, isn't it? But it seems to me like you've got a very good start on the rest. So well done for that. I'll tell you who else's birthday it was this week, right? A bloke that I spent a lot of time tracking around America, and that's Bill Clinton, 74. Do you know what? Bill Clinton, I think, is one of the luckiest guys alive. When you think of the, you know, the furor that surrounded Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein and all that kind of stuff. You know, I don't know how Bill Clinton has escaped from, you know, really critical examination about his relationships with women, because they were quite honestly, they were so well known in America and quite disgraceful for a married man and for a president.
I think maybe his time is coming.
Well, it may be.
You know,
I think he's escaped for so long. I think now he sort of got past it. Why do you think his time might be coming?
Well, because he appears to be implicated in the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. Some pictures have emerged of a young woman giving him a massage this last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's faced, as you say, multiple allegations of assault and even rape.
Yes.
Back in, what was it, 1978,
yes,
there was Juanita Broderick,
yes,
who says he raped her during the campaign to become Arkansas governor.
Yeah.
And I think now, post Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, Jeffrey Epstein, all of these criminals, that this textbook sexual harassment of subordinates, we don't accept that anymore, do we? And I think, you know, that the spotlight will turn back on him.
Mm-hmm.
He may not have escaped after all.
Mm-hmm. No, all of what you said is right. I mean, I was a bit reluctant to raise the rape allegation, but it's in a book. It's in writing. I've read the book. I've read all the books on Bill Clinton. And in another occasion, you may have picked this up as well, a woman who had a confrontation with Bill Clinton ended up with a very swollen lip. She alleges that Bill Clinton bit her lip as he was forcing himself upon her. And he simply said afterwards, he picked up a bucket of ice and said, I should put some ice on that if I were you. It doesn't look too good. The stories that you hear, I went down to Arkansas to find out what the Bill Clinton phenomenon was all about. And before I'd even been there 2 days, you heard amazing stories how Clinton, who, as you quite rightly say, was the governor of Arkansas, the poorest state in the Union, would bring, you know, the guys called the boys, that was his personal collection of sort of security, into a hotel restaurant. And the women there would all refuse to serve them because they'd been manhandled by the men so often. You know, and this was just laughed off as a, you know, a thing that happens in the South of America. I mean, he used to go on these campaigns where he would take a suite of rooms upstairs in a hotel, and the guys downstairs, the boys, would find a particularly attractive delegate and say, the governor would like to see you. Or when he was running for president, you know, the candidate would like to see you. And these women would go up to his room without any suspicion that it was anything other than to be thanked for their campaign work. And Clinton would drop his trousers in front of them and say, you know, get on with that and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, God, that's disgraceful. Yeah, but what I think is karma is a thing, and that however long it goes on, we only have to think of Jimmy Savile, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes, he died by the time they finally decided to admit that he was an abuser of children.
Yeah.
But he was disgraced and discredited post his death.
Absolutely.
And, of course, that had a knock-on effect to Operation Nutri and all the rest of it. And people were arrested who weren't actually guilty of anything because the police missed out on Savile.
Yes.
But I do think that true offenders will always be caught up with.
Well, maybe. I don't know how they can live with their conscience. You know what I mean?
Well, they haven't got one, obviously. Well, otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do that kind of thing in the first place.
Yeah, you know, if I shot somebody or killed somebody, even though I felt they had it coming to them, I'd have to hand myself into the police, because how could you go to bed and wake up every night thinking you'd take somebody else's life? And similarly, if I'd committed some terrible crime. But you're absolutely right. I don't think these people have a conscience. I think they have a sense of entitlement. It was very funny right at the start of the campaign that he launched to become president, because a woman called Jennifer Flowers suddenly came out of it.
Oh, Jennifer, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, Jennifer, yeah. And she was extremely attractive, blonde hair, you know, and very shapely and all that. And for 10 years, Clinton had been going out jogging every morning, followed by his detail in the car, and he never jogged anywhere except round the corner to Jennifer Flowers' house, had sex with her, and then put his jogging gear back on after he'd soaked it in the sink in Jennifer Flowers' house, and then ran back round the corner where Hillary would be waiting with his breakfast. But she must have known. Hillary Clinton has a lot to explain about her own behaviour living in the same house as Bill Clinton all those years.
Well, of course, but she was obviously in on it. That was their arrangement. Yeah. You know, there are many marriages like this where wives turn a blind eye to their husband's nocturnal activities, let's call them. But I think theirs was less of a marriage. Well, is less of a marriage, more a business arrangement.
Yeah, I think it was. I totally agree with you. I'm pretty sure that was. I tell you who else is coming to nearly 70, your friend John Deacon.
Oh, poor old John Deacon, I know. It's such a tragedy, his story, I think.
Right.
You read such a lot about John. Yes, we shouldn't feel sorry for him because he's got 130 million in the bank or whatever. But the fact is, he quit Queen in 1997. He never got over Freddie Mercury's death.
Right.
And the reason for that was that John had lost his own father at the age of 11. And losing Freddie was too much for him to bear. It forced him to grieve for his dad, and he went off the rails. And he became addicted to this lap dancing club, Sophisticats.
Yeah.
You probably know where I mean. I've never been such a place.
I've never been to a lap dancing club.
Yeah, he started going to this place. He was a regular.
Yeah.
And he got involved with one of the strippers called Emma Shelley, 25 at the time. He ended up buying her a flat and a Mercedes. Mm. Oh, she performed, by the way, under the name Push Bar. What does that tell you? Mm. And he used to take her to Nobu and all these fancy restaurants.
Yeah.
And then, of course, eventually his wife, Veronica, found out. They got six kids together.
Right.
They've now been married 44 years. Mm. Veronica sort of marches in and takes control when she finds out what's going on, because it was exposed in the Mail on Sunday.
Right.
And he's now a recluse. You occasionally see a picture of him popping out to post a letter in the letterbox just along the road from the same house that they've lived in all these years of their marriage.
In
West London.
Oh, West London.
He has nothing to do with Queen business. He had nothing to do with the film, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Brian May told me that he is sane. He does sign legal documents and business deals and that kind of thing because he's required to. But other than that, he was actually described as a sociopath. He doesn't want anything to do with anybody.
Mm. I mean, sorry, does that include his wife? Is he still with his wife now?
Oh, yeah, no. He and Veronica are still together.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So he got over the problem with the lap dancer, did she? And
I think his wife probably made him get over it.
Right,
yeah.
I see, yeah.
She's a very strong character, Veronica.
I've sometimes wondered about that, you know, about being a recluse or a hermit or something. Would I be a more settled individual? Because a hermit and a recluse doesn't have to then answer to anybody else in the world. And that must be a very peaceful place to be. Do you see what I mean?
I think we are recluses to a certain extent, aren't we? Because we are single.
Yeah.
We live our own lives. We call our own shots. Mm. We're not answerable to anybody. Mm. We haven't been locked down with a partner we find we can't stand the sight of.
No.
You know, there's an awful lot of people re-examining their marriages now and thinking, well, what is this actually? You know, yeah. Do I really want to be in this? I hear many complaints from my friends who are re-evaluating mm-hmm. their setups, their marriages, their partnerships. We haven't had to go through all that. And there's a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, well, you may be right. It's just the pressure of having to respond to other people all the time, particularly if you don't like, you know, the pressure they're putting on you. I mean, it's called business, isn't it? You know, and you have to adapt to it and you have to do things. You know, you'll have had setbacks along the way writing your books and all that kind of stuff, you know, particularly difficult editor or publisher or something like that. But that's all I'm thinking. I suppose it's called retirement, isn't it? And if you retire, you cut yourself off from the world. But I don't think I could ever retire, could you?
No, I'll never retire because I love what I do and I'm very right. fortunate to have as my job my hobby.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Great. Okay, well, Leslie-Anne, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. I hope we're not going to experience another heat wave this weekend. I don't think we are. Keep my eye very closely now on the weather charts. And I really have enjoyed a bit of rain this week, haven't you?
Oh, God, thank God for the rain. I did rain dance. Yeah.
Yeah.
My kids, I've got two birthdays this weekend.
All right.
My son on Saturday and my daughter on Sunday.
Oh, really?
So we were kind of hoping the rain might lay off a bit for their birthdays.
Yeah,
but doesn't look as though it's going to, but I can't complain because I was begging for rain.
Exactly. And is that in the garden?
Yeah, everything in the garden, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, have a great time.
Thank
and,
you.
To everybody else, thank you for listening again. And Leslie-Anne and I will be back with you at the start of next week.
Take it easy. What perfume do you wear, Michael?
I don't wear perfume at all. What I do is I actually spray on my hands and then rub on my chin and my face Polo. Polo men...
Ralph Lauren, yeah.
Yeah, Ralph Lauren, that's it. Yeah, Polo, yeah. And so at Christmas sometimes, because we're all, when we get to our age, the people who've got everything and don't need anything, I always tell people to buy me some Ralph Lauren aftershave because it'll always get used. I'm going to read you a paragraph here, which, and it's one that shocked me because this is a report of what goes on. It's been a familiar scene for many in recent months. The party is rather more intimate than most. This is going on Zoom. Early on, many of the attendees are already stripped down to lingerie or completely naked. And as the night gets underway, there is decidedly X-rated activity unfolding on screen in front of you. I'm not talking about this anymore, Leslie, and I'm too shocked. I'm too shocked.
Can I ask you, are we shocked because it's women doing it?
Well, it's men and women.
You know, we turned a blind eye to men and their websites, didn't we?
Mm.
So are we shocked because it's female activity?
Well, whatever it is, it's shocking. Too shocking for me. I saw a picture of her with Princess Beatrice, Sarah Duchess of York and Princess Eugenie, i.e. Fergie and her two daughters. And it's a bit like when you...
Well, the ugly sisters is their note.
Well, that's very harsh. Come on. I mean, oh, blimey, another crack at another female.